Welcome to Camp Podcast Special Edition, Piano Talk. I am pianist Eunmi-go, and I serve as president of the Contemporary Art Music Project, or CAMP. CAMP is an organization that promotes innovative art music and collaborates with composers and performing artists. One of many activities we do is our podcast series. Our hosts explore a wide range of topics, from marginalized composers to current collaborations. Piano Talk brings you new piano repertoire and composers who wrote them. Tonight, I'm your host, and I am delighted to have composer Juhee Bansal. Hi, Juhee. Thank you for joining us today, and I am very excited to talk about you and your music.
Hi, Eunmi. It's really great to be here.
So I noticed that you have very interesting and rich background. You are an Indian, but you grew up in Hong Kong, and now you live in California.
Right. That's true.
So there's so many cultures in you, I guess, naturally.
You know, I have a good friend who used to tease me and say that I'm culturally conflicted, which is, I think, is a really great way to put it, because I've always kind of, you know, bounce around so much amongst different cultures, so like as I have growing up, that I'm Indian, all my history is Indian, I lived in India and was brought up in India, but even when I go back to India now, I feel like I'm not quite a part of that culture because I've been gone for so long. So, you know, it's kind of become a part of my personality, and then something that I grapple with in my music a lot, this idea of how different cultures come together and where they conflict and where they overlap. It's just, as a concept, it's something that's really fascinating to me just because of these experiences growing up.
It is. And also, you're very interested in nature.
Yes, absolutely. I don't know how many of your listeners might have been to Hong Kong, and I loved Hong Kong when we lived there. That's probably where, you know, most of my experiences growing up were, but it's such an urban center that for me, when I first moved to the States, and, you know, California, Los Angeles is certainly very urban, but there are so many places within a reasonable driving distance that are just, you know, wilderness of all sorts. There's wilderness as the ocean, wilderness as the mountains, as deserts, there's snow, there's, yeah, it was, for me, something that was so new that once we started exploring it when I came to the U.S. for school, I just kind of fell in love, and that's been now something I've been pretty obsessed with for the last 15 or so years.
Yes, I just admire all beautiful pictures of nature on your website, and also this, I know it's piano talk, so we're supposed to talk about piano music, but I have to say that I just loved the solo cello work of Song and Magic.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, it's just amazing, amazing work. And it just literally sounds like I'm in water and listening to the whales and trying to find out what they're trying to talk. It was really fascinating.
Thank you. I mean, that piece was inspired by this incredible experience getting to hear humpback whales while diving. And I'm actually taking some of the same inspiration, the same idea of like what whale song sounds like underwater, into another piece I'm working on for next season as well, for a larger ensemble. I'm really excited about.
Yeah, that's amazing. Can we know a little bit about that? Just have a kind of
sure. Yeah, so that's a commission from the Oregon Mozart Players. It's a professional chamber orchestra in Oregon. And I feel like composers never have as much opportunity to write for orchestra as we would like to have, just because it's such a big thing to put together. It's financially an investment for everybody. It's a lot of logistics. So it's not something we get to do as often, I think nearly as often as we would like to. So for me, when I was told I had this opportunity to write, it'll be between a 10 and 12 minute piece for orchestra. This was just the inspiration, which I had, you know, kind of grappled with in the solo cello piece, this idea of what, not only what whale song sounds like underwater, but also that kind of interaction between the natural noises underwater, like the noise of the water, the noise of fish eating always surprises me because it's such a loud noise and I never expected that to be such a loud noise. Mm-hmm. When you're underwater, you're like immersed in that. And so sort of this idea of songs emerging out of noise in a more broad way. I'm really excited because, of course, in the cello solo version, it was all about a single string instrument and what can one string instrument do that kind of, when it's noise, this is what it might sound like. When it's pure song, this is what it sounds like, and kind of in between the two. But, of course, with orchestra, the color palette is just mm-hmm. infinitely larger. Mm-hmm. And that spectrum of the ways that you can create noise versus the ways that you can create melody. And even just this idea, you know, what does it sound like when all 35, 40 players are playing together versus what does it sound like if they're all doing different things or you just pull one or two to kind of hint at this idea of whale song. I'm really excited, actually, to finish this piece.
Yes. Personally, I cannot wait to hear it, really.
Thank you so much.
I think there's, you know, that this water, you know, that's of course from this of song and magic, that's kind of water, and then you also working a big piece that's about the water and being in water, and you're probably the most recent project, it's Waves of Change, right? So that's not directly about water, it's, I mean, more complicated, but somehow there's water and surfers and special interest in water.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that piece is, it's not the most recent one, but it's definitely one of my more recent projects. That was, I want to say, late spring of 2020. Mm-hmm. And it is, I mean, it is a piece that's about water, but as you said, it's a bit more complicated. So that's a piece that is, I mean, the inspiration is the story of the Bangladesh Girls Surf Club, which over the last couple of years, now it's become the Bangladesh Girls and Boys Surf Club, which is actually really great given what the story is. Mm-hmm. You know, the actual story of the club itself is that I want to say a few years ago, in the section of beach called Cox's Bazar, it's the longest uninterrupted stretch of beach in the world, but it's also one of the poorest areas in the world. There were these group of girls who normally, you know, these are 4, 5, 6-year-old kids. They will be selling trinkets on the beach because that's what they do to make money for their families. Like, they don't have an education. They're not given any opportunities, not for any malicious reason, but just because their families don't have a lot to give them. Mm-hmm. And a couple of these girls had seen, this was a lifeguard, he's the one who started the club, surfing, and one of them asked him to teach her. And kind of from that, it turned into this club where the girls were not only, so they're taught how to surf, but as part of that, they're required to go to school, and they're, you know, they're given tutoring through the club as well. And, you know, a number of them have, again, these are girls who had never gone to school previously because it's not required and their families weren't able to support them to do it. So they started their schooling much later through this club. The first girl just graduated from high school, I want to say last year, mm-hmm. which is a, you know, really big deal.
Right.
And, you know, there were girls who were having to work as prostitutes to support themselves and their families. And for some of them, this was a way out of that kind of poverty as well. So it's like, you know, the story became, it's kind of about the water because the piece of music is about using the water to find choices, to find options, to find freedom, to find something that is like more than what they had access to before. So in a sense, it's kind of not about, as you said, it's not about water as water, but it is about water as a kind of pathway to choices that these girls otherwise would not have.
Yes, I thought it's a very meaningful project, and also it tells what kind of artist you are, a composer you are, that strong belief in strong women. And also there's, I thought it was interesting to have these two different singers in the work.
Thank you. I mean, you know, it's, you mentioned a couple of things that I think are interesting. The two singers for me were kind of, you know, in the culture that these girls live in Bangladesh and Cox's Bazar, it is a very, very conservative version of Islam that they live within. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my mom is Muslim, and she would say that it's maybe sometimes almost a skewed version of Islam, in the sense that it's not letting girls do and be what they want to be. But so there's this real element of culture clash. And I volunteered with the group a few years ago. So, you know, got to meet some of the girls and hear some of their stories. And one of the things that's really interesting, you know, not easy, it's complicated, but interesting, is that there's this culture clash between the surfing culture that the girls are attracted to and kind of a part of, and then this incredibly traditional culture that they're living within. Mm-hmm. So like, girls in that culture, they're not supposed to go into the water. Like, just walking into the waves on the beach is something that they get hassled for and called names for. And so there was this kind of, hearing their stories, there's a lot of culture clash there. And these girls are kind of at the center of that tug of war between this very westernized surf culture and this very traditional culture that they live in. So the two singers were kind of my way of grappling with that. There's a Western soprano, and there's a Hindustani singer, it was Catherine Schumann and Ranjana Ghatak, both incredible singers. And what's interesting is that they're singing the same text. One is in English, one is in Bengali. And kind of, you know, trying to find the places where they come together and the places where they split apart and do something different, just as kind of a mirror to this idea of where the two cultures come together and where the two cultures are in conflict with each other.
Yeah, that sounds really amazing. Is there a way for us to watch the opera or listen to?
Sure. It's on my website. So don't know if there's a way to like write out my name, because it's an unusual name. So if I just say it, it might be hard to find. But it's at www.juhibansal.com, and it's also on my Instagram.
And it's under music?
Yes, under Waves of Change.
Under Waves of Change, and there's a link.
Yes, absolutely.
Great. Yeah. So we can all go and enjoy and, yeah, listen to, watch the whole opera. It's amazing, really. I thought you wear so many hats also, that you compose and you teach, you conduct also. Do you still have the concert series? Are you still running the concert series?
Is this New Lens we're talking about? There's an old one I used to run. So not anymore. Hmm. I am on the board for a couple of other series, which right now I'm more heavily involved in. So Synchromy is one in Los Angeles, and I'm really excited. We have our first concert post-pandemic this Sunday. And then a couple of others in New York. But, I mean, as you know, with all musicians, we all wear so very many hats, and time management is really a, you have to figure out what you put your time to. So I really loved running that series, actually, and we did it for quite a few years. But over the last couple of years, I've become more busy just with my own commissions and my own teaching. So I've just taken a bit of a step back from that. But I'd like to be more directly involved, I think, running a series again. And Synchromy and Phoenix Concerts in New York give me a chance to do that.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, I would like to talk about the series later also too, but I wish, when I read about it, I wish I want to go every week. Not every week, but every concert. I wanted to attend every concert, and it's this kind of curating this mixture of old and new repertoire.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm sure you know this as somebody who works in new music so much. I kind of feel like we have this responsibility to engage new audiences into it that, you know, otherwise may not be exposed to new music or may not be interested in it. And one of the things that's fascinating as somebody who's inside the new music scene is you realize how much variety there is. Mm-hmm. Like, really, the music from every composer sounds so different. But I think when people are on the outside, sometimes they have this perception that new music is just fill in the blank, maybe something that just sounds crazy and eternal. And But so the idea with programming for that series, and I still really strongly believe in thematic programming, is to like pick a larger concept for each series and kind of present this juxtaposition of music from not only old and new, but also from different styles. So like you could pick a theme, something like stars, and bring together a bunch of music that is very different, but related to that theme. And I think it, you know, once you have that larger context, and maybe, you know, this is related to what we'll talk about maybe when we come to my piano music as well and travels. Mm-hmm. Once you have a larger concept, I feel like it gives people a way to step into the music and relate to the music, even if it's a little unfamiliar to them. So that was kind of the concept there. And we played with this idea with that series with New Lens of doing kind of redacted programs. Mm-hmm. So you would know what the theme was of a concert walking in as an audience member. And maybe you'd know one or two of the pieces, but you wouldn't know everything that you were going to hear. And then we would, you know, you'd listen to the music and then you'd get the big reveal at the end. This is the piece that you just listened to. This is what year it was written. This is the composer. You know, I really strongly believe in listening to music without a whole lot of preconceived notions.
Yes.
And that was one way to do that. And again, I'm sure we'll talk about that more in context of piano music as well. But I think it's really important to give people the opportunity to do that. Just listen without a lot of baggage and expectations about what something should be.
Absolutely. I think it's such a cool idea. this nice surprise.
Right.
That's really cool. Well, continuing to the thematic idea, and you just mentioned about this a star theme, and your piano solo piano work, Land of Waking Dreams, that's about this night and the night and star. That's probably one of my favorite thematic ideas in music. I also was thinking about Bartok's Night Music, and how I try to make sound like insects. this piece, and it's just a really fascinating theme.
I mean, it's a really special one. I think there's a good reason so many composers have grappled with it. Mm-hmm. You know, I did a cantata a couple of years ago that was on the same theme. It was this idea of stars. And one of the things that was interesting there in doing the research for it, that cantata was kind of a historical, I don't want to say retrospective exactly, but it pulled texts from different points in history and different cultures looking at the stars. Mm. And what was fascinating to me there in doing the text research is that really it's been the stars and the night sky and this space as a whole has been something that we as people have looked at for thousands of years, right? Mm-hmm. And we've wondered about what it was. We've told stories about it. There's mythology from all different cultures about it, and kind of used the stars as a way to reflect on who we are as people. And, you know, that's changed quite a lot, I think, in the last 100 plus years. Like, as technology has advanced and we've come to know about space and understand about space in a way that we haven't in the past. But I still think there's something very powerfully human about just looking at the night sky and trying to understand how we fit in this framework of the unknown. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably at least one of the reasons why so many composers have written music, mm-hmm. taking some kind of inspiration from that.
Yeah, probably. And it's, I think it's just really also beautiful to look at.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think we can listen to Land of Waking Dreams and continue talking about it.
Thank you.
Okay, it was Land of Waking Dreams by Juhi Bansal. It's really such a beautiful piece with so many colors from piano.
Thank you so much. You know, it's funny, Unmi, you mentioned the Bartok night music out of doors. The piece is written for Nicholas Gierpe, who is a very fine pianist, and in full disclosure, is also my husband. But so what's interesting is that because when we're, you know, we have one instrument in the home, and I hear him practicing all the time because we, you know, share a wall in our home studio. And he plays a lot of Bartok. So it's interesting in the sense that those specific pieces that you mentioned, they're things that I was listening to even as I was working on the piece. So there's this kind of sense of all those different sounds and colors kind of permeating, maybe not in a very purposeful way, but kind of those sounds being in my mind as I was trying to grapple with how do you create music about the night sky, without exactly trying to paint it, just trying to evoke it in a broader sense. And that piece specifically for me, I mean, again, I was, you know, born and brought up as a city kid, didn't spend a whole lot of time outdoors. And I do have memories from when I was really little, when we were in India, of like, you know, just being out in our on our roof and watching shooting stars from the night sky. But this specific piece was written after one of many backpacking trips we've taken up in Utah. And I just, you know, it's one of those spots where you're way out in the wilderness. The nearest anything is 200 miles in every direction. And, you know, you just like wake up to get some water in the middle of the night in your tent, and you look outside at 1 a.m. or 2 a.m., and it is just breathtaking. I mean, it feels like you're in a whole other world just looking at the stars around you. So the piece was kind of not exactly trying to create that, but trying to create some of the feel of that. You know, that when you're looking at the night sky in that state, there's like this background that's all these different colors. It's black and it's blue and it's gray and kind of this multi-layered thing. So on one sense, trying to create a pad that had all these different hues to it. And in another, because the stars themselves, there's so many of them in that kind of landscape. Trying to create something that's a bit pointillistic, but also kind of shifting as far as how dense it is, moments where it's really like just that feel of a lot of stars crowded in together versus moments where it just feels like there's a few. And again, the piece is not strictly programmatic. I hope and certainly tried to create it so that you don't have to know the backstory to enjoy it. But for me, as somebody writing it, I feel like it's important to have an inspiration to help kind of shape the music. And this experience of just seeing the night stars. Night sky and the stars in Utah was what was behind Land of Waking Dreams.
Yeah, I also heard there's some this kind of explosion that made me think of this, you know, how that stars actually explode sometimes, and it's this light and yeah, all this amazing stuff. There's some I saw that I couldn't really see it well, but there was this preparation. I was wondering that what you used.
Sure. You know, it's interesting because I feel like preparation on piano is a tricky topic to grapple with. The sounds are amazing, but it's a lot of extra work for the pianist, and so many venues will just not allow you to do it. So here I wanted to have something that would change, just bring a different timbre and a different color, but not something that was any kind of like invasive preparation. So it's just a plastic piece of chain that you can buy at the hardware store that you lay down over the strings. It's the same way you would just lay down a piece of paper or something and get a rattle, but it's a different quality. And it's put on the piece for, I can't remember now if it was the middle or into the end section, and then it's removed halfway through though while the pianist is still playing. They have kind of an ostinato in one hand and they remove the chain with the other. And it was just a nice way, I think, to just bring again slightly more pointillistic, slightly more shimmery color without doing anything that was truly a preparation of the piano. I feel like more venues respond well to something like that than they do to like putting the rubber washers and things in between strings.
No, that I thought that was very effective, and it seemed I think I have to watch it again, but it didn't seem to be extremely complex to prepare and use that the plastic chain. I couldn't see really well that if it was plastic or something else, but
yeah, we tried a few. I think plastic was my preferred one because you can get nice fat links and there's no danger of it falling into the piano or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And it is a very simple preparation. You just tape it to the sideboard basically, and then while you're playing you pull it off. It doesn't take more than a couple of minutes tops.
Yeah, and also there was some little plucking and hitting the strings, those stuff. Yeah, it's a really beautiful piece, and I felt that you, as an educator, and also when I think about your concert series and what you just talked about the series, think there is definitely this strong educator side in you.
There's this
desire to educate and empower people with education.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think it's part and part because I have been a teacher now for so many years, but my mother was also a teacher, so I've kind of grown up around that culture a lot. And, just, again, I suppose relating back to what we were talking about with waves of change and kind of how my family history relates to things like that, you just kind of see firsthand how much education can offer up for people and how many opportunities that you can find through education that just don't exist in any other way. That's just become something really important to me to try to, in whatever ways I can, whether that's teaching directly, whether that's writing music about some of these things, whether that's doing a bunch of collaborative projects that will work with like STEM subjects, for example, at schools, just really trying to support education in every way that's possible.
Mm-hmm. And this piano teaching piece, Trebles, is a part of that mission and your idea about teaching. And I think teaching new music is very, very, very important.
Oh, I completely agree. Well, I think you and I had talked about this a little bit in an earlier conversation, but I always found it fascinating. I mean, I came to new music as as an older person, in the sense that I had been involved in classical music for many years before I realized that there was such a thing as quote unquote new music. I think up till then, probably Brahms, Sibelius, maybe a couple of Debussy pieces were like the newest thing that I had heard in terms of classical music. And of course, in day-to-day life, we're all hearing music that is much more current than that when you're just walking about your business. And prior to the pandemic, at least, if you're at the shopping mall, if you're at the restaurant, you're hearing music that is much more recent. And one of the things I had noticed, both as a student and as a teacher, was that, first of all, I think people are much more receptive to new music than sometimes we think they are, in the sense that, if you take people who already have a lifetime of involvement where their image of classical music is just Mozart and Beethoven and Brahms, they can sometimes be hard to bring over to new music. Not always, and there's ways to do it, but that's a harder sell. When you work with younger students, and by this I'm, I use the term younger loosely. This can be anybody up into their 30s and their 40s, but particularly really much younger students, there's this sense that music can just be anything that I think is very powerful. They don't yet have this preconceived notion that, well, music is fit into these boxes of this is what classical means, and this is what electronica means, and this is what pop means, music is just music on the one hand. And I think there's an opportunity there to just get them listening to different things and invested as performers in different things. And I mean, not just from a selfish perspective, of course, I feel strongly about sharing new music with everybody. But actually, for students themselves, because of the world they live in, because of what they're exposed to, I think there's very often this real excitement and a way to relate to more contemporary music that maybe they don't have with Mozart. And certainly, I mean, we learn in all directions, right? If somebody is immediately relating to new music, they can learn to appreciate Mozart and Brahms and vice versa. But my idea with these pieces particularly was to try to write something, one, that would show younger musicians, I mean, much younger, we're talking about 4, 5, 6 year olds on, show younger musicians what classical music can be in current time and contemporary time. Two was to give them something that they could be really excited about. So there's nothing too crazy. There's no prepared piano or anything like that in these pieces. But there is trying to bring in, for example, different modes. Rather than just having pieces be in major and minor, there's modes in some of the pieces. There's clusters. There's a bunch of syncopation. So like, again, in a really focused kind of grade appropriate way, trying to give them new sounds that they don't always get in the older repertoire. And in the third, I suppose, trying to build technique through doing all of that. So it is new music, it is technique building, and it's about hopefully giving the students something exciting that they can relate to. Again, with this kind of thematic overview, this idea of travels in different national parks around the country, to give them hopefully a foot in the door and something to relate to the music with.
Yeah, it's we had Tyler Klein last time and talk about this orchard, and also orchard is thematic collection. And you know, when I commissioned pieces with my students, that of course they had some interest in certain musical material, you know, certain kind of rhythm or mood, but also, you know, some of them just took pieces because they just like certain fruits.
Sure, yeah.
You know, I think with younger students, I think that happened and that got them interest in music itself. And they loved playing it, and also, you know, they can find out the about the fruit and how it's portrayed in music.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it worked in trebles too, because it, of course, that image and their probably own experience also goes with the music.
Absolutely. I mean, there's something to be said for performers, no matter how young, being able to invest something of themselves in the music and relate to the music. And Tyler's piece is also exactly what you're talking about. I think they do this incredibly well. It's like the students know they can put something of their own experience into what they're playing. Even if they haven't been to the places, for example, in Travels, they've seen photographs. These are really iconic places that the music is about. And if they haven't, they can see photographs. The National Park Service has this series of videos where they'll do like little virtual walkthroughs. So there's a lot that the students and young performers can, if they feel like it, they can do research. If they've already been to these places, you know, those are conversations you can have. For example, how do you shape the color of a line? If this line is about water, how do you phrase it if it's about water? And kind of also bringing in some elements of interpretation. I think the theme also gives them a way to do that. Ideas that might be too abstract if you don't have something thematic to hold it together, I think suddenly can become approachable to young performers if you do have something thematic to relate it to that they already have experience with.
Yes. Also, I mean, I think this tells me how personal music is.
Yeah.
Right? I think it's also the why so many people love music and why so many people perform and compose music.
It really is. And, there is something about being on the, like, I don't consider myself a performer so much anymore these days. I do occasionally, but usually in pretty limited contexts. But there is something so incredibly powerful about being the person who is, whether to an audience or just to yourself, able to shape and control and make the sound. I think there's like a real magic to that, no matter what age or experience level you are. And this was also kind of a way to try to empower students to do that.
Right. Yeah. Well, let's listen to Troubles. I think the we could actually listen to the whole set since it will be probably about 10 minutes. Yeah. So let's listen.
Thank you.
It was Troubles by Juhi Bansal. And we can find out about this collection on your website, correct?
Yes, absolutely. And they're published now by Theodore Presser as well, but the links and everything are on my website.
Yeah. So, well, piano teachers, if you're interested in, you can go and get music and start teaching. What we talked almost an hour, 50 minutes about your music and piano music. Is there anything else that you want to add or you absolutely want to tell us?
I mean, maybe just in a general sense, as we're having this conversation about contemporary music and not only younger musicians, but just this kind of open-minded listening where it's not, we're not prejudging music into boxes. And I'll maybe just reiterate how important I think it is to get musicians exposed to different types of music early. The amount of excitement I have seen from young musicians who are playing new music to me is actually really fascinating as somebody who's on the outside kind of watching this. I see students who really struggle sometimes to relate to older repertoire. You put something that's a bit modal or something that has a bunch of flashy chords, you know, not just triads, but some sorts of more complex chords. And it's really interesting to me how immediately they will gravitate to that and get excited about it and then, just really work at it. You and I have had this conversation earlier as well where, you know, younger musicians will sometimes put weeks and months of serious focused work into a piece of music in a way that we as professionals don't do as much because we work on such tighter timelines, you know. I think there's something really powerful both as teachers, as composers, as people who work with any kind of young musicians to try to get them just exposure to new music early, because often I feel like we talk about it as adults and as those in the field as like, here's the box for new music and here's the box for old music. And really, of course, it's not that. It's just this spectrum of music that keeps growing year and year by year by year. And I think there's something very powerful about being able to share it with students in that kind of way, share music that was written last year as well as music that was written in 1750, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, you came to my class and gave wonderful talk, and one of my students she said she had some fun with her students exploring all piano sound inside.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. And apparently they're young students, very young kids, and they loved it. And I thought that really was telling.
Absolutely. Yeah, young performers are so open-minded and they get so excited about any like new sounds and new ideas. I was so happy to hear that she did that with her students.
Yeah. I was very happy. Well, thank you so much for being our guest and share your music and your insights.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a great conversation and just so nice to talk about new music and piano music and music education, all the topics that we did. Thank you, Inmi.
Thank you. Support us by donating. You can go to our website and simply click the donate button. Help us continue our podcast, festival, and our other exciting projects. Thank you for listening. I will see you next time with more piano music.